from the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. This is Rob, this is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. Hello. Before we get to the main show, I need to discuss a very serious issue that has come to our attention. There are people listening to this podcast against their will. Forced to listen, folks. It's beyond belief. I can tell you that Carl, Bill, and I are very concerned by this. We're looking into it. We're investigating. The Highlands Bunker is a human rights podcast. I mean, I think everybody sort of understands that. Anybody listening who doesn't want to and doesn't like it shouldn't be forced to listen to it. It's not right. It's not right. Since you clearly have internet access, if you're hearing this and you're tied up, it's somehow in a locked room of some sort, if you can use the device playing this in some fashion, please email us at highlandsbunker@gmail.com. We'll send help. We'll help you. Because the aesthetic and the show, like the tone of the show, that's not changing. And that's just how that is. Legally, Bill has told me that I need to read this. We do apologize profusely and sincerely for the podcast being so good. He said we needed to say that. It's so good, people, they can't stop watching what we're doing. This is oddly also the plot of Infinite Jest. I don't know if you know that. It's very strange. Anyway, very important news on the program today. Last week, Spotlight Delaware ran a story about conditions during the heat wave at the Vaughn Prison. Very, very poor conditions. There was some obfuscation from the Department of Corrections. I know that'll come as a huge surprise to all of our listeners. Our friend Larry Lambert took a trip there, sort of an impromptu look-see to see what was going on, made his own assessment. I spoke with him as well over the weekend. But I wanted to get the real story, so I was lucky to have been put in touch with the mother of the inmate who was quoted in the story. Josh Chaitin is his name. Spoke to his mom and was able to arrange a phone call between myself and Josh from inside Vaughn. I was also able to speak to some other inmates who are speaking out, who are talking in very, very clear terms about what the situation is inside the prison, what it has been. And I think it was really impactful to me to hear this story, and we're going to stay on top of it. Without further ado, here is our discussion with some folks inside the Vaughn Correctional Facility. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Highlands Bunker Podcast. This is Rob. How are you? We have a very special interview today and a very important one. Last week, thanks to Jessica at the Innocence Project Delaware, I was connected with Jennifer Chaitin. Jennifer is the mother of Josh Chaitin, who last week spoke with Spotlight Delaware about the terrible conditions inside the Vaughn Correctional Facility in Smyrna. And I have today Jennifer and Josh on the line. Hello, how are you guys doing?
Oh, man, we're doing excellent. Excellent. We're doing excellent. How's everybody doing today?
Well, I'm doing pretty well, I have to say. I'm glad it's a little cooler for everyone, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. That rain cooled it down just a tad bit.
Yeah, it sure did. Before we get into the specifics of the story last week, can you just talk a little bit about where you're housed right now, what it's like, you know, what your day-to-day is like? I know that there are several different types of sort of housing there and incarceration there. Can you just talk a little bit about what yours is like and how it works for you day-to-day?
Well, yeah, me personally, my day-to-day, as far as the heat, I'm in W Building in James T. Vaughn Correctional Center. And my day-to-day, as far as the heat, is treacherous. I'm going to be honest with you. I've never been anywhere in my life where I sweated all day long and was not able to do anything about it, you know? So that I'm sleeping, you're waking up, been pouring, sweating. I'm sitting in front of a fan, the smallest fan you can think of, and it's blowing nothing but hot air around. And you're just sweating all day. The shower doesn't even do anything because the minute you come out the shower, you're sweating even more, you know? So there's nothing you can do to try to really mitigate it at all. You just got to get through it until it's over, you know? Which is, it's sad because it's a lot of guys that have been dealing with this and has been consistently dealing with this for years and decades prior to this situation being brought to light. And I'm just happy I was able to, you know, shine some light on this situation that was very inhumane and very cruel. Because, again, you get dogs AC. Why can't you give a human being AC, you know?
Yeah, when I spoke to your mom last week, I was shocked to learn that the canine unit there and the dogs get air conditioning, but there are places where the inmates don't. I think that's very telling.
Absolutely. Last year, one of the canine dogs died because of the officer's negligence and took the air conditioning unit from the infirmary where those guys are being housed in hospice and dealing with real medical conditions. And they took the AC unit from those individuals and gave it to the canine dog, which was their negligence, you know? So they do nothing but do cruel and unusual things to us here on a day-to-day basis. As a matter of fact, an officer yesterday by the name of Mr. Campbell, he just fell out because of the heat yesterday. And there was another officer a few weeks ago named Fields. He fell out off also. So some of these officers are also being put in these torrential and inhumane conditions, you know, due to the heat and due to their job title, you know? And some of the officers who speak up on our behalf get treated exactly like we do, you know? There was another officer named Ms. Rodriguez, and she has no AC in her office. And she said this is the third fiscal year that the department promised her an air conditioner, but still hasn't received it. So any officer who goes to bat for us, they shun them and treat them exactly like us, you know?
Really? That, I mean, I wish I could say that I was surprised by that, but I suppose that I'm not. Are some of the officers there because of that condition sort of still behind you and the other fellas since you've spoken to Spotlight Delaware and your name's been out there?
I wouldn't say that they stood behind me, but I would say that they basically said it's about time that something is done, only because, you know, they're in a situation to where, you know, they're trying to take care of their family, put food on the table and things of that nature. So a lot of things they can't really speak up on, which I do understand. But being as though the situation is so big now, a few of them has come to me and said, like, listen, you're doing some incredible things and you're shining light on the situation that should have had light on it from the very beginning. Because who builds a building with no ventilation? There's zero ventilation on a unit. So it's bizarre. It doesn't really make too much sense.
So can you confirm or deny, do you know whether there's air conditioning now in the infirmary? I mean, it's one thing in Building W where you guys are, it's terrible, but there are older, you know, elderly people, very ill people in the infirmary. Are they dealing with this too?
Absolutely. There's parts of the infirmary where they're dealing with excessive heat. And we spoke to a nurse named Miss Jess, and she informed us. She said, listen, we're running around putting ice packs on these guys just to keep their body temperature down, just so they don't overheat. So even the nurses up there are strained right now dealing with this, because now they're putting their life on the line dealing with the heat also to try to, you know, make sure that they're doing their job to their best ability to make sure that these guys don't overheat, which is causing a strain on them because then they're overheating. So it's just, it's very bizarre.
I want to ask you, I actually spoke in person with Representative Larry Lambert on Sunday, 2 days ago, about his visit there, who he spoke with. One of the things that he wanted to tell me was that the story that the corrections officers and the Department of Corrections had about potentially moving people just to be able to sleep in air conditioning was pretty contentious, and it's not very clear, you know, sort of to people why that was contentious. The DOC, I know, asked people who refused to go to the building where the hole is to sign a piece of paper basically saying you were given this opportunity, but you weren't able to go. Can you explain why everyone sort of declined the opportunity to go into another area of the prison that might have been air conditioned just at night when you would sleep?
Absolutely, and before I go into that, I just want to say one thing that's going to make absolute perfect sense. They wanted to send us there until a Friday, but the heat isn't going to stop. So are you going to continue to move 300 people every week? No, they're not going to do that. What they were going to do was leave us back there because they know that we are the ones speaking up about the conditions. And this piece of paper that they wanted us to sign, you were basically saying, if you sign it, you're okay with the conditions. And if you don't sign it, then you got to move, you know? But again, are you going to continue to move 300 individuals back and forth every week? You're not going to do that, you know? And the warden, he basically just lied about everything to try to satisfy the people above him. And we were forced. Like, we wasn't really given much of an option because we asked him, we were like, well, what if we don't want to go? He said, well, then you're going to the hole because the conditions back there, mind you, we're in minimum right now. Minimum security, we are the lowest security building in the jail, you know? So with that being said, we were going to maximum security, the hole, which means that we weren't coming out every day. We were only coming out certain times of the day, and we were going to be forced to abide by the conditions of the maximum security back there. And again, the waiver was forced. We were signed a forced waiver. They had the entire building come over to the cafeteria to sign this forced waiver because we weren't given much of an option. You sign it, you don't, you're going to the hole, you know?
Yeah, that was something that Larry wanted to make sure was very clear, that, you know, the Department of Corrections can say what the options might have been, but it's a lot more complicated and it's a lot tougher on all the fellas in there than it appears to be when you just look at, hey, we gave them this option, they turned it down. It's not really like that.
Absolutely not. They only gave us that option to satisfy the people, and only because, to be quite frank, there was fire under their ass about the situation. So that's the only reason why that option was ever given. And I want you to be very clear about something. This warden never once ever walked on the chair prior to Mr. Lambert coming into this prison. Every time I've seen him, he comes in, he goes to the desk where the COs have air conditioning blowing on them all day long, where they keep the doors closed, where we're trapped with the heat all day long. So this warden only did this to satisfy the people who were on, to be quite frank, on his ass about it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the only reason why. There isn't no other reason. That's the only reason why, you know?
So I also understand that you you were plucked out and moved for several hours last week. Can you give us any information on that? What was that all about?
Yeah, they came and grabbed me. And mind you, I've been waiting to see the eye doctor for about 8 months now because of my left eye. And I also have a huge lump on my hand right now that they haven't done anything about. They told me that they can't do anything about it unless it gets bigger. I'm like, well, it's protruding out of my wrist, so I'm trying to figure out why does it need to get bigger for you guys to do that. But nevertheless, they took me out to the eye doctor, which is something that had I not would have shined light on my situation, they would have never did it, you know? And also, there's individuals in my building that they give mice traps to catch their own mice. So we got mice running around. We have black mold everywhere that we're breathing in that they know about. So these are conditions that they already know about that we've been subjected to, but now they choose to try to do something about it only because of the pressure that's on them. I know an individual named Michael Fields has caught 4 mice within the last 2 weeks because they're giving him his own mice traps, which is, again, it's bizarre the way they're doing things around here. There's another individual named Fennell Bain who is being subjected harsh conditions also on his tier, dealing with torrential heat. He works in the chow hall also, making sure people are fed, and he's dealing with excessive heat, and they're not giving them dudes any real, you know, any real civilized communication in order to try to do anything to mitigate their situation, because they're in charge of keeping the guys over here fed, and they're sweating all day long, and they're mad if these guys want to get extra food, and they're working very hard. So this place that we're in right now, hopefully it gets a lot better, but right now I'm hoping that this is just the start, you know, and I'm not going to stop until everything has light shined on it, because there's so much corruption here that needs to be told, you know.
Yeah, I'll be fairly careful with my words here. I certainly want people to listen, but I certainly also don't want sort of any blowback on you personally. I know it takes a lot.
To be honest with you, I'm looking forward to the blowback, because it's only going to add validity to everything that I'm doing, because right now I'm doing something divine. I'm doing something that God let me do in order to try to save lives, you know, because this building has been here since the 70s. And I watched people die. I watched people earlier this week where medical had to rush the building to check their vitals because they were feeling dizzy. So these are conditions that we've been subjected to. So to be quite honest, I'm very much looking forward to the blowback, because I don't have no problem using my name for anything, because, again, somebody has to do something about this, you know, and why not it be me, to be honest?
I have to tell you, not only do I respect the hell out of that. I completely feel where you're coming from. You know, I've said for a long time with this show that the prisons are basically state funded torture in many, many different ways. We've heard people, you know, almost be killed in fights. We know that there was an uprising there. We know that the conditions, as you said, are terrible. They're not really getting better at the moment, but at least some light's being shined on them right now.
Absolutely.
I know from what I talked to Larry that they're, and your mom did actually talk to the governor last week, and so I think that might have broken something open, because there was funding available for sort of an emergency intervention on this, to get at least AC in the buildings that didn't have them. So I know that that was signed off on. Has there been any talk of that? Do you know that? Is there any movement on that at all, to sort of like for an emergency, get some equipment in there and get some upgrades in there?
Absolutely. It's just been all talk, to be quite honest. I mean, I've seen some contractors come and take pictures, but as far as I'm concerned, it's just been all talk. I've heard about everything. I've actually read about it also. So I don't see any action really being done. It's just talk at this point, you know.
Yeah, I at least you got a little bit of a reprieve this week. But unfortunately, as you said, it's something that's going to keep on coming. I mean, it's July 1st today, and we've already had, you know, one pretty massive heat wave last week. And so I think we need to demand something quickly, very quickly.
Absolutely, 100%. And a lot of individuals are asking me, like, why are you going so hard like this? Why are you doing all of this and you're about to come home? I said, because I'm not doing it. I mean, of course I'm doing it for the people that's here now, but people aren't going to stop coming to prison. So I need to make sure that there's people subjected to conditions that are, again, somewhat comfortable. But as far as air conditioning, why isn't that something that an individual can't be subjected to and have as a right, you know? So everything that I'm doing is just the tip of the iceberg, you know, because, again, I'm about to be released soon, and I want to make sure that there's things in place that guys can feel protected and know that there's somebody that's really speaking up for them, and they can actually see it manifesting right in front of their face, that somebody that they're around that's subjected to the same conditions as them are doing something about it. And that's one of the main reasons why I didn't want to move also, because if I move, then we're voiceless, you know. Then they stop the problem. No, I want to sit here and suffer with the guys until I know for 100% that something is being done, you know?
I do know. Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm very glad to hear that your time there is coming to an end. It's actually difficult for me to imagine. Even I've spent a couple of nights in a cell, but nothing like full incarceration. And I really find it hard to imagine how you guys deal with all of this. It's really an incredibly fucked up situation, and I really appreciate what you're doing. I hope that when you do get home, you know, our studio is always open. You get to come up here and we can continue this work, because I mentioned to your mom last week, this is something, you know, the conditions in prisons and how we do things has been something that's always sat really, really bad with me. I don't like it. You know, I've tried as much as I can in my little platform, to shed some light on what the hell is going on. And, it's incredibly brave what you're doing. I was so, excited to be able to speak with you, and I appreciate you taking the time. Is there anything else you want to say? Is there any other issues that are going on that are sort of connected to this?
I just want to say one more thing. We are finally deemed credible, because our credibility, as far as the DOC, they has been shot. But apparently, the DOC's credibility is shot, because they've been lying profusely to everybody, to the governor, to everybody that's in a position of power. They've been lying to, you know, only to try to pacify the situation. You know, they told us that we can control the temperature in the shower. We can't, and that's where all the black mold is. You know, we cannot control the temperature. As of lately, they've been bringing ice, but the commissioner said that we could just go get our own ice whenever we want to, you know. So there's been a lot of lies on their behalf to try to discredit us, but now their credibility is shot, and now we kind of have the voice now, and I'm not going to let us be voiceless anymore, you know.
Absolutely, and yeah, I mean, it did come out, at least I think in Spotlight, that engineers there...
You have 1 minute remaining.
Well, I'll just say this. We'll stop it there.
Hey, listen, I can call back. I got more time. I can call back if you got some more time.
I do have more time. If you want to call back, you certainly can. I don't want to keep you too long. But if you want to call back,
I got all the time in the world right now. I also have two individuals right here. One's Fennell Bain, and also Michael Fields, who actually would like to chime in on the conversation. Also, if that isn't too much.
I'm into that. Go ahead, and if you run out, you want to call back, and your mom can patch us through. I'd love to speak to those guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I was just going to give a warning to the governor. I know you've spoken to Jennifer last week. I know that the funding has been moved over. These changes have to happen now. Like, we don't want any sort of institutional wrangling. We know, just like with the police, the Department of Corrections are untrustworthy. They've lost their credibility. How many?
Using GTL.
I don't know how many times that we're going to be able to prove what's going on here. We're going in and getting it firsthand. From the people there. Larry saw it firsthand when he went. And so, yeah, we got to keep moving on this. So that's my message to Matt. And we're just going to wait for a quick call back here.
Hey, man. This is Josh again. And I have Michael Fields on the phone also.
Michael Fields.
Yeah, how you doing, Robert? My name is Michael Fields.
How are you doing? How you feeling?
I'm fine, man. I'm fine. I'm on a great today. Yeah, I've been incarcerated at Vaughn since like 2012. We've been dealing with a lot of situations that have been going on down here that are detrimental to our health and our well-being. And we seem not to have a remedy for any of these problems.
Yeah, what's your take on the... On the move, I assume you signed the same document that you didn't want to move and be stuck in another building as Josh described. I guess you went through the same process.
Yeah, we went through the same process. You know, the paper was signed under threat, arrest, and coercion brought forth by the staff. Even the warden himself, he's the highest official in his penitentiary. I've caught 3 mice in my cell in less than 3 days. I've spoken to the warden. I've spoken to the commissioner. To no avail. I've asked him to come fill a hole up in my cell at the point of entry where the mice are getting in and out of my cell. or an interior warrior, and I've had no help. All they're doing is giving me a mice trap to catch the mice myself.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for what you guys are doing. I know it's very difficult. I'll tell you the same thing that I told Josh. I hope you guys can stay safe. I think it's an important thing getting this stuff publicized. And the only thing I can say, and Josh sort of echoed it, it's working. You know, it's starting to get traction. People understand how poor the conditions are. And I'm just happy that people are standing up.
Yes, sir, because we're forced to take provident measures to even survive down here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, families, we have loved ones out there that care about us, but we just want to be treated fairly. You know, some people are under the assumption that just because we're incarcerated, you know, we're not human beings. We have
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm so sort of humbled and excited to speak with you all, because that's a big part of it. You know, they put these prisons far away. They sort of obfuscate and lie to make sure that people don't know what's going on in there. And frankly, that's the way that they operate these torture chambers. And we're not standing for it. So. Once again, I really appreciate what you all are doing.
Well, we appreciate you being an advocate for us.
Yeah, of course. Is there anybody else around who'd like to talk?
Yes, sir, Mr. Fennell Bain.
How you doing, Mr. Roberts?
How are you?
Oh, I'm empowered and motivated. I just wanted to share a few thoughts. I think Mr. Chet and Mr. Fields have pretty much covered everything, but I wanted to share this small perspective. Officer Campbell, I've just talked to him, and he confirmed the identity of Officer Fields, because I wasn't sure which officer passed out earlier this week. He confirmed that it was him, and then he turned around and passed out. So I was really concerned about him, because I have a rapport with him. He's one of those few officers, along with Mr. Fields and Ms. Rodriguez, three officers who are in units where they don't have air conditioning. They're part of a small contingent that understand how to balance doing their job and treating inmates humanely. And this is why I have particular concern for these officers. But I wanted to touch on a broader issue of, you know, public sentiment regarding our fight with getting air conditioning in here for inmates. The reason why people should care is because 90% of us are returning home. And there's always this perception that simply because you committed a crime, that it somehow nullifies your humanity. If 90% of us are returning home, then it's a must that we do our best to correct and rehabilitate those who come to jail, so they don't come home and commit more crimes. The sentence is the punishment. Humans, we're social beings. So just us coming to prison is the punishment, because we're removed from society. To put us in prison and continue to punish us, it negates the purpose of what corrections is all about, because now you return men home to society as better criminals versus better civilians, because they become so embittered with the system and being dogged out during their term of incarceration that they don't have any incentive to behave and do better. And a lot of men are sitting in here because of these deplorable conditions, and they've forgotten all about that they victimized somebody in society, because they've been so victimized in here. And so we become so preoccupied with our victimization that we forget about the individuals we may have victimized. And it's dangerous for all of us, because it makes the prison dangerous and, by extension, society. That's why people should care about this.
Yeah, and I'll go even a step further. That's absolutely right. And another thing that's right that I always feel is this is a reflection on everybody. You know, this is how we've decided to deal with the criminal justice system, and how we've decided to treat human beings, our neighbors, you know, our friends, the people who are going to come out and live with us, you know, going forward. And it says something about all of us. It's a stain on everybody if we can't treat people humanely in this situation. It makes us all look very poor. It makes us look like monsters. And I don't, you know, we got to do something about it because it's, like you said, it does have an impact on the guys that are going to be coming home, how they feel, how they were treated, and how they could, you know, integrate back with their families and with their neighborhoods and with society. But it also means something about society broadly. You know, if we can't, if we can't treat people humanely, if we can't fix these problems and we treat people like less than dogs, as Josh said earlier, then what does that say about us? You know, where are we? What are we doing? You know?
Yes. The greatest of us is determined by how we treat the least of us.
Yeah, that's in a book. That's in a book somewhere.
Yes. And this is why myself and Mr. Chatton and others have created the Dream Initiative to combat these issues. You know, and we stand to suffer a great deal behind this, but if, you know, like I like to say, if doing right comes at a cost, we're willing to pay that price. We have to change this system. We're not doing society or victims of crime any service by simply punishing those who do harm. We have to give them a chance to better themselves so they don't come home and continue that harm. You know, punishment, we've allowed this dominant narrative in society around criminal justice to have us believe that punishment is the same as accountability, and it's not. Simply punishing somebody does not hold them accountable. You have to set it up to where they can actively take responsibility by repairing the communities they harm, and it starts while we're here. Otherwise, our prisons just become conveyor belts turning out monsters. They come in bad and leave worse.
Yeah, we can't have it. We can't have it for all of these reasons. And I appreciate what you guys are doing. You mentioned the Dream Initiative. Yeah, what is that? That's sort of like what you guys are using as a rallying for people inside to sort of speak out.
Yes, absolutely. Myself, Joshua Chatton, and Hayward Evans. We are the three founders, along with Michael Fields and Derek Smith, and a few other guys behind us. I mean, we felt like we're against an established order, so it's a must that we be established, you know. And we, your entire time in here, you have nothing but your dreams. You have nothing but your memories. And so we've envisioned and reimagined an entirely new system of justice in America and by extension, better communities than the ones we come from. And so that's where the dream, that word came from, the concept. So we're deprived of programs in here. The Department of Correction does not provide adequate programs in here. They're more like groups. It looks good on paper so they can get that $400 million in funding. But in reality, we're the only reason why we are rehabilitated is because we're addicted to self-improvement. And so because of that, we've taken that addiction and turned out our own programs through the Dream Initiative to help other guys. So we really had to teach ourselves. We had to rehabilitate ourselves. We had to habilitate ourselves because we were never habilitated first to be rehabilitated. So that's how the concept of the dream was born.
Very cool. Well, I said the same thing to Josh, and it applies to all of you. I'm happy to hear that some of you will be going home soon, whatever that means, but I would love to meet all of you guys and continue this work. I think it's incredibly important. You know, as I said, I think it really reflects upon the kind of people we are, how we address these situations, how we come into it, and if you allow a group of people to not be human to you or not be a priority just because of something they did or your perception of who they are, it says something about all of us, and we need to look in the mirror and figure out how we're going to change it, how we're going to improve it, because we cannot continue like this. It's not going to work. Well, I really appreciate you guys joining. Yeah, I'll give anybody the opportunity. Anybody there who wants the opportunity to speak, I'd be happy to speak with them.
Oh, this is Josh again, and I just graciously thank you so much just for everything, man. It just means a lot to have somebody as passionate as you to really take the time out of your day, you know, to speak to us, because it truly means a lot, only because, you know, the individuals that you just spoke to, I work closely with them every day, and we're very, very passionate about everything that we're doing, and we just can't wait to come home to implement this change, you know,
yes,
in our society and within the prison, you know, because there's so much going on around here, which is nothing, to be quite honest. There's nothing going on around here that's implementing any type of structure for somebody to feel as though they can come home and earn a good living, because there's no trades here. There's no real education. There's no professors here coming in to try to give any college courses. There's nothing here for an individual to go home to keep the recidivism rate down and to not think about coming back to prison, because there's little to no options here, you know. I've exhausted all resources since I've been here, culinary, automotive, and just everything that I think I can do to try to better myself when I come home, to give me an option so I don't have to scramble and figure out how to get and earn a living, you know. So it means a great deal to us right now that you're speaking to us and allowing us to have our voice through your platform. And it just, to be quite frank, it means a lot. It makes us quite emotional because, you know, this is a big situation to us, and it just means a great deal to us.
Well, I can echo that back to you. It means a whole lot to me to be able to do it. I think, you know, it's a little bit of emotional to me as well, I have to say. So, thank you so much for joining, Josh. Josh Chaitin, in the Smyrna prison, advocating for himself and his fellow inmates. It's an incredible story, and we're going to be telling more of it. Josh, thank you. Please stay safe in there, and I hope to see you outside very soon.
Oh, absolutely, and I can't wait to just pull up, man, so we can just talk and try to figure out how to implement some true change, you know, within our communities and within the prison.
Absolutely, man. Well, take it easy.
And, Robert.
Yes, of course.
Can I chime in on one more thing?
Of course.
We've been receiving the same wages in this penitentiary for about 30 years. We receive about $35 a month for the jobs and the tasks at hand here. And I've been down almost 14 years. I don't have any money accumulated. Like, everything goes back to commissary. Commissary prices keep rising in this place, and the wages are not sufficient. I was transferred to Pennsylvania in 2018. I was up there for 2 years, and I was making about $240 a month. I was able to, you know, take care of, send things home to my kids, like gifts and things like that of that nature. Here, I can't even look forward to that. Now I have to revert back to my family taking care of me and sending me financial means, by way of financial means, to take care of myself in this prison. So that's another thing we need prison wages, so we can at least accumulate some money, so when we come home, we won't be struggling.
Yeah, because right now we're making pennies. Like, I'm the tier man on the tier. I'm in charge of trying to keep everything clean as best as I can, and I don't even get any pay. I just get good time. So it's individuals like that around the prison who aren't even getting paid for everything good that they're doing within the prison. And the pay, again, it's pennies, to be quite frank, you know.
Yeah.
It's not even accumulated to dollars. It's pennies.
Yeah, I've mentioned that too. I know that I've gotten reports of, you know, even like state agencies, different state agencies bring in inmates to clean the office. The legislature has brought in, or at least used print shops and paid, as you said, pennies on the dollar to get professional printing. It's not appropriate. We cannot, you know, this goes back all the way, not to get too deep on everybody, but this goes back all the way to Reconstruction. When we won the Civil War and we abolished slavery, we said slavery was abolished unless you're incarcerated. Then you can work for nothing. You can work for pennies. You can go out, you know. So it's just remember that aspect of it. I think that was so important to bring up. Remember the aspect of, you know, stealing people's labor, giving them just pennies to get any little nicety at the commissary. That's a real important one, and I'm glad that was brought up.
Absolutely, 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 Robert. And again, I just want to reiterate, man, just thank you so much. Me and the guys right here, me, Fennell, and Mr. Fields. I'm gonna say our names completely. Fennell Bain and Michael Fields. We just appreciate you so much, Robert.
Yeah, can you spell Fennell's? Can you spell his first name, Mr. Baines?
He's right here.
F E N G-T-L.
Absolutely, Robert. And again, anytime you want us to reach out, and anytime we have any true concerns, you know, we'll definitely reach out to you also, and just keep you in a loop about everything that's going on, you know, just so your listeners can understand and see and understand this process and these progresses that we have going on also.
I will do that. Yeah, we'll definitely keep the lines of communication open for sure. You know, now we know how to reach each other. So if there's any, you know, anything that we need to speak about, please get a message to me and we'll do it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I thank you so much, and I pray that you have a blessed day and you stay safe also, because, you know, your voice is very important too.
I really appreciate that. Thanks, everybody, and thank everybody who spoke. I really, really appreciate you guys, you know, stepping up and talking about this stuff. I think it's really, really important. It's very courageous, and it's inspirational to someone like me and my audience. I think it's going to be very inspired by this. So thanks a lot. I very much appreciate it.
Absolutely, well, Robert. Again, we look forward to working with you. Absolutely.
Cool, guys. Have a good one. I'll speak to you soon. Hello. Yeah, we wanted to do a little sort of like a come down, like a chill out after that very serious sort of emotional discussion I just had with Josh and the fellas from Vaughn. So we're just, you know, kind of like decompressing and sort of thinking about it. And we're doing it in conjunction with thinking about the end of the legislative session. So we just wanted to give you guys a preview for next week. We will be doing a little sort of post-game show. Talk about what happened, some rumors, some innuendo. Lessons learned, I think, is going to be a big part of it. So, yeah, we'll be doing that next week, and we're trying to book a person or persons who have been tracking this legislative stuff all session for the Working Families Party. It should be pretty fun. It'll be a fun one. As I said at the beginning, I know there are people who are listening against their will. I think a good way, what we might start to do, Carl, I don't know how you feel about this, is before every episode, we should tell people this is an episode that you're allowed to listen to like during the day. Like if you're making breakfast or you're doing the dishes after dinner, you can do that. But then there's other episodes when people need a name for those episodes where really it's an evening episode. You get yourself a little cocktail, you burn a little spliffy do, and you listen to it for fun. You know, not every show is, you know, Mad Men. You know, some shows are funny or Curb Your Enthusiasm. So some shows are going to be like Curb Your Enthusiasm, and some shows are going to be like 60 Minutes. And I don't have fucking time to explain which are which.
Yeah, I just some of them will even be 90 Day Fiancé or something like that.
Some of them could be Love Island.
Yeah.
But I
Yellowstone.
Like, correct.
I can maybe, you can put tags on episodes. Maybe I'll just have...
Be like,
here's the vibe that you can expect this one. And it's not an actual description of the episode, but it's just a random TV show.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this is like, kind of the, you know, we're going for a Frasier vibe tonight.
This is a Cheers vibe.
We're doing
Mad Men, some Mad Men vibe, Sopranos vibe. Yeah.
This one's the Oscars.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I think people just don't, they don't give it a lot of thought. They're not really thoughtful. So it's hard for them to, like, absorb this kind of stuff and discern what's happening. I don't know. I think it's too much AI. There's too much AI slop. And they're like, they just like, oh, this is a... No, it's not. Be quiet. So next week, we will be giving you our report card. Most of the report cards that you'll be surprised to learn are incompletes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of dropped courses. A lot of courses have been dropped the parents have called, hey, we just dropped this class for.
A lot of people switch to pass-fail halfway through.
Pass-fail. Actually, the pass-fails are still in committee.
Yeah.
Carl and I were just talking before we came back on, and there's too much pass-fail. There's too much, like, one-credit courses. Mm-hmm. There's all one-creditors. You do like a gym course for one credit, yeah, or like some sort of weird lab.
Yeah, like a lab, you know, lab. At UD, it was Rocks for Jocks was the classic one.
Yeah, which is just,
it's a geology class because you need it on there, but you're not really doing anything.
Right. That's the legislature.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like they're like the sixth-year junior. They have like 45 credits. One day, they'll get that work done.
Yeah, because I think if we can do like a little bit of framing right now, because I'll link it in the show notes, but the elected support team with WFP, so I was not involved in this, so I'm not shouting myself out at all, but the elected support team, there's a very dedicated group of people that track these bills and committees week in, week out, and they've put together this really amazing legislative report that goes through the good, the bad, and the ugly of all this stuff. It's, I think, pretty fair and balanced because there was some good stuff that happened this year. And we want to point that out, but there's a lot of stuff that really needed to happen that did not. And so I think that's what we'll talk a little bit more about next week in terms of the specifics of that. But one of the things that I've noticed is that a lot of it comes down, you sort of got like three categories of stuff in terms of good things that happened. So the first is things that are being pushed by some specific more traditional advocacy group that has been doing this for 25 years. And then they eventually finally get this piece of legislation through. So the perfect example of this year, you think about 25 is usually an exaggeration, but not always. Medical aid and dying. That's been pushed for at least a decade. That finally got through this year.
Yeah, I think that one's over a decade.
Might be, yeah. The lead paint bill that the ADC and the lead-free Delaware that they pushed.
Amy Rowe, bro.
They've been pushing for this forever, and they finally got a version of it through. I know that's not all that they wanted. The compassionate release bill that we talked about. Like, this has been a big effort for a while, and they were able to get something through. So this is like the ones that we talk about where it's the classic Kamala Harris, you get a Pell Grant for in a disadvantaged community after 5 years, that sort of thing.
If you spent 25 years in prison and you're over the age of 70 and you've completed our courses, you can qualify to apply.
So that's like the one type of good bill that gets through usually. The second type of good bill that gets through is the thing that, oh, everybody's paying attention to this right now, we got to do something. So the perfect example this year, the two ones would be, one is Larry Lambert's Pollution Accountability Act, which raises fees for people who, commercial polluters. So, you know, you had the big thing at the Delaware City Refinery, and suddenly, weird, even though this bill's been worked on forever, suddenly the next state leadership is all on board and they pass it through. But
So a little side note on that, too. As I mentioned on the call with the fellas from Vaughn, I spoke with Larry Lambert on Sunday, and we were talking about this bill and how it had a very good chance to pass. And I mentioned to him how really I think fines ought to be calculated as means tests.
Yeah.
That was
another bill that got introduced, but then it got...
Well, of course. I gave him the example of Finland, who charge you traffic violations by your income.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some big entrepreneur guy there got like a 110,000-pound speeding ticket.
I do love that.
You know, for doing like 35 miles an hour over the speed limit in his Ferrari. And Larry's eyes lit up. He was like, really? He's like, I like that idea. I was like, well, I like that idea too. So, yeah. So that I was happy that Larry got that. The way he framed it to me, and not to get too bogged down because we'll talk about it more next week, but just like the real estate reassessment, tax reassessment, mm-hmm. It hadn't really been changed since like the 70s.
Yep.
So like the maximum fine for some of the categories was like $25.
Yeah, something crazy like that.
It's like, so it's just something ridiculous.
Such a out of date thing. And so it did pass, but in classic Delaware fashion, it had initially included agricultural polluters, which if you live in Kent and Sussex County, and even parts of like rural Newcastle, this is like a big issue because a lot of the crap that's in the water is not from big commercial polluters, but like big ag. And that was cut out with an amendment by Lumpy Carson. And Larry made an agreement. It's like, hey, yes, fine, I'll cut it out. But I'm introducing this other bill, which is going to deal with that specifically. People are like, fine, it got to the House. It gets killed in the Senate. So you get this, even those sorts of bills. I think the other good example was Mara Gorman's banning agreements with ICE from local law enforcement. That was great. I'm glad that passed. These are bills that actually end up usually being good things, but it's only because people are covering their ass.
Well, the other thing is, speaking of
like school,
ass covering,
school breakfast.
School board. School breakfast. I was going to say the school board, because the one thing that
did, school board, yeah.
School boards. And Medina's sort of
to be fair,
school,
Medina has been working on that for a while, too.
Yes, but now that
but that's
got,
why they do it.
Now we got a guy who was living in Pakistan. Now we have, so it's like, when I read that at the end and Medina got a pass, I was like, that's the one guy bill. That was for one guy.
Yeah, yeah. So you got the ones that, like, there's a really dedicated group of people who've been pushing for really hard, and they get some sort of like limited reform. Then you got the ones that it's your cover your ass bills, you pick up something that already exists when a big news story drops. And then the third, and these are ones that don't pass, which is the things that are actually really going to fundamentally affect people's lives. So we didn't get rent stabilization. We'll talk a little bit more about that, I think. I need to run a few things by a few people before I say much publicly there. We didn't get universal free school meals. We didn't get these, even the tax brackets, like a very limited tax bracket bill we were not able to get. The school funding kind of got kicked down the road, that there's more going on there that we can talk about. Like a lot of these big fundamental things that could have happened, even just putting more money in affordable housing. They were supposed to get $100,000 or $100 million. They put in $19 million, stuff like that.
I mean, we love an underfunded Inspector General, don't we, folks?
The Inspector General. Which would be good. And also, that's another one that falls under that category of, like, people have been pushing about this forever, and they get $1 million. So, like we said last
time,
you'll get an office, and maybe you'll get, like, a typewriter or something.
But, as we just said in the phone call, they were able, which is far too little, far too late, but appropriate $2 million to upgrade the HVAC at the prison.
Yeah.
But $1 million for an inspector general's office.
Yep.
So, you know, just, you know,
they'll stick them in the creepy lieutenant governor's office, which I
maybe they'll
about
work from the prison. The inspector general will be at the prison.
Yeah. So, we'll talk more about the in-depth of that. But
needless to say,
there are good things that have happened, and we sort of laid out, we're going to lay out more about what those good things were. But
and I'll lay out why they're bad, probably.
It points to the fundamental issue of they're not really serving the interests of working people. They're serving the interests of what will get them the minimum that it'll take to get them reelected.
Yeah, it's more of a managerial role. You know, the strategy's been set, and you can work in this little box. And the parameters of the box are basically what Carl just explained. If you've worked on it for over a decade, maybe we'll figure out a means test or some kind of calculation to do it. If it's an emerging problem, like the guy on the school board who lives in Pakistan, we'll maybe do that. The corporate thing, we're always going to do that. And everything else is just sort of window dressing. The things that are going to materially help people, make things more affordable, make their lives better, make sure that they have housing and their kids have food and health care. We don't touch those things with a 10-foot pole. And that's going to change. That is definitely going to change.
No.
Folks, that's it. I'm glad you listened today. Really give some thought to what you heard today. As I said, this has been a big ballywick for this podcast from the beginning. You know, we talked to Lex, single-digit episode.
I think it was literally episode two.
It might have been episode two, about the uprising at Vaughan. When I spoke to the AG and the Kathy Jennings episode, I called our state prisons the gulag. So we all know where we're at. We all know that we're torturing people. We're treating them like slaves, as they said on the call. You know, they make 35 cents a day. The prices at the commissary go up, but they're still treated like slaves because, really because we didn't assassinate enough Confederate officers, I think. But, you know.
That could have helped.
That would have helped. I mean, that's what we talked about. The look at the Reconstruction Amendments. Slavery was abolished except for, and read that except for phrase and see how it applies. Sicko stuff. Anyway, thank you, Carl, for everything you're doing. And we'll hit you next week. Left is best.